This week on Vaticano, we revisit the solemn celebration of Saints Peter and Paul and take a closer look at the sacred vestments Pope Leo has revived from tradition. We honor the jubilee of priests, bishops, and seminarians and meet Deacon Gilbert Tika just before his ordination by Pope Leo XIV. Then we travel to Castel Gandolfo, where the town is preparing to welcome a pope once again. For this and more, Vaticano starts now. Rome came alive with color for the feast of its patron saints, Peter and Paul, as the Via della Conciliazione was transformed into a floral procession leading to St. Peter's Square. The intricate designs, rich in religious symbolism, were crafted by artisans and volunteers from across Italy. In his homily, Pope Leo reflected on the enduring bond between the apostles. Despite their differences, he said, their shared mission and unity in Christ remain a guiding example for the Church today.
Our patron saints followed different paths, had different ideas, and at times argued with one another, with evangelical frankness. Yet this did not prevent them from living the Concordia Apostolorum, that is, a living communion in the Spirit, a fruitful harmony in diversity.
On the occasion, Pope Leo bestowed the pallium, a white woolen band with six black crosses and three pins, upon 54 metropolitan archbishops, placing it on their shoulders as a sign of peace and unity with the papacy. Pope Leo returned to a tradition that Pope Francis had modified in 2015 when he decided that metropolitans would receive the pallium in their own diocese from the Apostolic Nuncio. Among those receiving it was the Archbishop of Szczecin-Kamien, Poland, who shared what the pallium means to him personally.
It means that from now on, you are to carry those faithful who have been entrusted to you, with their joys, with their blessings, but also with their difficulties. You must bring and accept all their tears and those difficult words. Everything must be accepted. So I realize that this is a huge task, carrying the community that has been entrusted to me.
To celebrate the feast, a delegation from the Ecumenical Patriarchate of Constantinople came to offer greetings, the first such meeting of Pope Leo XIV's pontificate, reaffirming the Church's commitment to Christian unity. The Pope spoke of the deep bond between the apostles Peter and Andrew as a symbol of the profound communion already existing between Catholics and Orthodox. The next day, during the Angelus on the feast of Saints Peter and Paul, Pope Leo reflected on their shared martyrdom as the foundation of unity. He spoke of an ecumenism of blood, a witness stronger than division, and called on the faithful to walk the path of reconciliation, trust, and conversion.
Pater et Filius et Spiritus Sanctus.
Amen.
When a new pope is elected, he changes from the red cardinal's vestments to a white cassock. This change takes place in a small anteroom adjacent to the Sistine Chapel in the Apostolic Palace, known as the Sala delle Lacrime, in English, the Room of Tears. This name refers to the emotional impact of donning the papal white and personally experiencing the weight of the office of the papacy for the first time. Pope Leo XIV greeted the faithful from the central loggia of St. Peter's Basilica on May the 8th. The attire he chose for his first appearance differed from the one chosen by Pope Francis that he wore on the night of his election on 2013. Pope Leo wore the mozzetta, the stole, and the golden cross, like those traditionally worn by the Pope, including most recently Pope Benedict XVI, when they first greet the world as Supreme Pontiff. Pope Leo chose a very special pectoral cross, as recalled by the rector of the Basilica of St. Augustine in Campo Marzio.
E si tratta di una croce con delle reliquie.
It is a cross with relics. Inside the cross are the relics of St. Augustine and St. Monica, of St. Thomas of Villanova, an Augustinian bishop from the time of the Council of Trent, who also served as a missionary bishop in Latin America. Additionally, there are other relics, one of a blessed and one of a venerable Augustinian. The blessed Anselmo Polanco, martyr of the Spanish Civil War in 1939, and the venerable Bartolomeo Menocchio.
Another element of the papal attire is the white cassock that reaches down to the heels. Traditionally, the cassock has 33 buttons, each representing the years of Christ's life. The papal sash cinches the cassock and represents the Pope's submission to his calling to protect the Church. The white zucchetto worn on the head symbolizes his task and authority. The pallium is a white wool band worn around the neck, adorned with six black silk crosses, and is fastened with three metal nails in remembrance of the Passion of Christ. The papal ferula is a pastoral staff carried during liturgical celebrations, typically with a crucifix just above the staff. Pope Leo XIV carried the ferula of Pope Benedict XVI on May the 9th during his first Mass as pontiff. He also used the pastoral staff made most famous by Pope St. John Paul II. The Pope's shoes also attract attention. Traditionally, the popes wore red shoes to symbolize their readiness for martyrdom. When Pope Francis was elected, he chose not to wear them, preferring simplicity. Pope Leo XIV also chose not to wear the red shoes. Among other items, the fisherman's ring holds profound symbolic value. On the outside, it depicts St. Peter with the keys and the net, symbols of the apostolic mission. Inside, it's engraved with the name of the reigning pope, now Pope Leo XIV. This is the ring that is defaced upon the death of the pontiff, as it has been used traditionally by the pope to seal official documents. Stay tuned as we soon explore the Jubilee of priests, bishops, and seminarians. Welcomed thousands of men preparing for or already living a life of service, seminarians, priests, and bishops, for a jubilee that reaffirms the joy and mission of their vocation. Inside St. Peter's Basilica, Pope Leo was welcomed with cheers and youthful joy by the seminarians gathered for the Jubilee Week celebrations.
Thank you, because with your energy, you feed the flame of hope in the life of the Church.
The Pope's message to the seminarians was clear. Their vocation must grow from the inside out. Formation, he said, is not merely about skills or academics, but about becoming men rooted in love.
We need to learn how to love, and to do it like Jesus.
For many seminarians, the week was deeply transformative. Thomas Hamann and Tom Stanchik arrived in Rome for the Rome Experience, an immersion program for American seminarians, but soon found themselves swept into the heart of the Jubilee, participating fully in both journeys of formation.
While I've been here, it's been so amazing to encounter the saints, to visit where they're buried, to hear their stories. And really my hope is to return to the United States and share what I've experienced here and share with the United States specifically that they have a great culture and history of the saints. And that I really am convicted that, especially in this time and age, God wants to raise up saints in the United States.
Oh yeah, we've said Mass in the catacombs. We were able to go to the Holy Father's Wednesday audience. Actually, we'll get a picture with him, which was awesome. We made a poster and we'll get a picture with him. It was a great privilege. We were able to also participate in the procession on Corpus Christi with the Holy Father. That was magnificent.
As seminarians deepened their sense of calling, the church's shepherds, the bishops, came together the next day for their own jubilee, a time to renew their commitment to unity and faithful leadership.
The bishop is the visible principle of unity in the particular church entrusted to him.
The Pope urged bishops to lead with integrity, detached from privilege and favoritism, and firmly rooted in prayer. On the issue of abuse, Pope Leo was clear and uncompromising.
Bishops must be firm and decisive in every case of abuse, especially those involving minors.
Specialmente nei confronti di minori.
Then came the turn of those living the daily demands of ministry, priests from across the world, who gathered to renew their yes to Christ.
Carissimi fratelli nel sacerdozio.
At the Auditorium Conciliazione, Pope Leo addressed over 1,700 priests, seminarians, and formators.
At the heart of the Holy Year, we want to bear witness together that it is possible to be happy priests. Because Christ has called us, Christ has made us his friends.
Pope Leo reflected on priestly celibacy, presenting it as a profound expression of friendship with Christ. This relationship, he said, is the spiritual foundation of the ordained ministry, giving meaning to celibacy and energizing a life of service to the Church.
E prego per tutti voi.
¿Cuántos aquí son de América Latina?
After the Pope's address, an informal moment followed. The Holy Father welcomed one priest for a warm, fraternal embrace, a gesture that embodied the closeness he had just preached. Speaking to the clergy, Pope Leo returned to a central theme, the importance of the spiritual life, staying close to Christ and close to one another.
No one here is alone. And even if you are working in the most remote mission, you are never alone.
The Jubilee of Vocations concluded on June the 27th with the ordination of 32 new priests in St. Peter's Basilica, among them a deacon from Ghana, Gilbert Tika. In the next segment, we sit down with him to hear how this jubilee has shaped his vision for the priesthood. On the solemnity of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, Pope Leo XIV presided over Mass at St. Peter's Basilica, where he ordained 32 new priests, marking the conclusion of the jubilee dedicated to seminarians.
A voi, cari fratelli presbiteri.
The Holy Father urged the clergy to center their lives around the Eucharist, to practice charity, care for God's people, and foster unity within the Church.
In this age of vast and devastating conflicts, we are reminded that the love of God has no limits. We are called to let ourselves be embraced and shaped by that love, and to realize that in God's eyes, and our own as well, there is no place for division and hatred of any kind.
Among the 32 newly ordained was Gilbert Tika, a seminarian from Ghana. In an interview with EWTN Vatican correspondent Valentina Di Donato, he shared his reflections on his calling and journey to the priesthood.
If you can bring me back to the moment in which you had this calling to become a priest. What was that moment like? Bring us back.
It all started when I was still a small boy in the primary school, growing up in my part of the country, a remote area with a low level of education. The priests are not a native priest from my place. They don't speak my language. And so as a small boy, an altar server, I was active, and I used to go around with the priest, going to the outstations to celebrate Mass on Sunday with the priest and serving as an altar boy. It was in this moment that the priest, not being from the place and not being able to speak the language, there was always a need to translate the homily of the priest for the people to understand. And so in some occasions, when there was nobody to do it, even as a small boy, the priest would ask me to do the translation, to translate his homily for the assembly, for the congregation. It was in this context, in one of the occasions, that I got this inspiration. After having done the translation, I felt, oh, but why don't you become a priest one day so that you can talk to the people directly yourself, instead of translating what another person is saying? I want to share also my own experience. And so this desire started growing in me as I made more experiences of this sort. Yep.
So that moment, that contact with human beings in your community back in Ghana, sounds like really moved you. What would you say, as Friday you will be embarking on your mission to become a priest, what is the role of a priest today in society?
Being a priest today for me also means that I need to be a sign of hope for the people with whom I live, the people I am going to minister to. Practicing the habit of looking at things with the eyes of Jesus Christ and helping others to look at the world and look at the events with the eyes of Christ, and let the people feel that they are still loved by God. Because sometimes in the midst of many things, we tend to forget that we are being loved and God is with us.
You're about to start your mission on Friday. Pope Leo just recently became Pope. How do you see him, Pope Leo, who will ordain you on Friday?
I feel that he is a gift to the church at this moment. And beginning his ministry as a successor of Peter, talking about peace, the gift of peace from the risen Lord, in a world today that is almost at the verge of war, there are many wars at the moment. And so this desire of presenting peace to the world, for me, is a good sign, and I wish to see this dream of the Pope come through the participation of each of us.
You'll be returning back to Ghana. What makes you want to go back to carry out your priesthood?
I feel happy about going back to Ghana again, because first of all, my bishop sent me to Rome to study and to come back to Ghana in the Diocese of Damango to minister there as a priest. And for me, I feel that it's an opportunity to make an experience of the Universal Church, the richness of the church, and I like to share this experience with my own people.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be back after a short break to discover how the small town of Castel Gandolfo is preparing to welcome the new Pope. The close relationship between the popes and the beautiful lakeside town of Castel Gandolfo, 30 kilometers from Rome, dates back 400 years, when Pope Urban VIII Barberini chose this idyllic place on gentle vine-covered hills for his summer residence. Since then, many popes have spent their holidays here, writing with their remarkable presence the history of the church and the world. Like during World War II, when Pope Pius XII converted the palace into a shelter for thousands of Jews.
Pacelli è stato per mia madre un santo.
That Pope, Eugenio Pacelli, was a saint according to my mother, because he opened the doors of the palace to ordinary people, and he stayed here for 6 months with them. Then we had Paul VI, who commissioned the construction of the schools for us. He built houses here. And Pope Benedict made his last blessing as Pope, also here, on February 28th,
2013. Stefano Carosi, a native of Castel Gandolfo, is the sixth generation of his family to run a bar in the heart of the town, a tradition that began in 1870. The weight of memories tied to the Pope's is so great, it brings a lump to his throat.
It was the evening of August 6, 1978, and at one point we saw an ambulance come rushing in here, and after half an hour the bells rang. And my father told me, this is the bell that rings when the Pope dies. On that evening, he, Paul VI, died here.
But it was especially the long pontificate of St. John Paul II to leave an indelible mark in the hearts of the local people.
He was in love with Castel Gandolfo. He would come after Christmas, he would come on Easter Monday, and on his return from long trips. I remember well when one night he came to the palace straight from Mexico at 11 o'clock at night. There were 100 people down here. They called him and he looked out to bless them. John Paul II is unique. He is our history. He is our family. He belongs to us.
È la nostra famiglia, è una persona di casa, una persona che ci appartiene.
Now, 12 years after Pope Francis decided not to spend his summertime here, his successor, Leo XIV, is coming back, beginning the holiday period in Castel Gandolfo on Sunday, July the 6th.
Si vive un'aria frizzantina.
You can experience the atmosphere of excitement, a very special enthusiasm. The whole town is happy to see so many people coming back from all parts of the world. For us, it is something really beautiful, because the people of Castel Gandolfo, in spite of their innate shyness, are very friendly to welcoming all citizens of the world, as we have always been used to during the Pope's stay.
For the first time since the pontificate of Pius XI in 1929, the Pope will not stay in the Apostolic Palace, which in 2016 was transformed by Pope Francis into a publicly accessible museum. For the next 2 weeks, from July the 6th to the 20th, Leo XIV will reside in the spectacular Villa Barberini, built by a nephew of Urban VIII in 1628 and immersed in the greenery of the sprawling gardens.
Villa Barberini. I think there's not much that needs to be done, really, since it has always been well maintained. They had to update some facilities that hadn't been used in recent years. Maybe it just needs a bit of painting. But Villa Barberini is beautiful, just as it is.
Villa Barberini è bella così.
While the Pope will stay in the garden area, the Pontifical Swiss Guard, the Papal Security Corps, will occupy the back part of the Apostolic Palace.
Anche la caserma.
They're getting everything ready, even the barracks. They've practically raised it to the ground and are completely rebuilding the Swiss Guard barracks.
Vatican employees have been working hard for several weeks now in a huge area of Castel Gandolfo, covering 55 hectares, 136 acres, that has belonged to the Vatican City-State as its extraterritorial part since the Lateran Treaty of 1929.
We're seeing these days that there is a buzz, many workers all around cleaning, cutting grass, and a lot of movement in the gardens. There is also the swimming pool being worked on and a small tennis court will come out next to the pool.
Pope Leo XIV is passionate for sports. He used to go to the gym in Rome 3 times a week. So the summer in Castel Gandolfo will be a perfect time for him to swim and play tennis. But it will be a time of hard work as well, as it has always been for the popes. On Sunday, July the 13th, at noon, Pope Leo XIV will meet the faithful for the Angelus prayer in the main square of town, after celebrating Mass at the nearby Church of St. Thomas of Villanova.